Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Coding 101 is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Coding 101 is brought to you by DigitalOcean. Simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code C101 in the billing section for a $10 credit. And by Lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit lynda.com/C101. That's lynda.com/C101. On this episode of Coding 101, we're taking you to the end of iOS Road. And welcome to Coding 101. It's the TWiT show where we let you into the wonderful world of the code warrior and the code monkey. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire, and joining me today, as always, is my super special Kamehameha ghost dad co-host. I don't know where that comes from. Mr. Lou Maresca. Lou, thank you for coming back on the Coding 101.
Thanks for having me back.
Now, I noticed that you're not at the office right now, so you're back in your home studio. And where are you exactly?
I live up in a town called Snoqualmie. It's a beautiful mountain area, and it's about 30 minutes away from Seattle. It's a great area and sunny and beautiful outside right now.
And I noticed that behind you, you've got some product reviews going on for another TWiT show. So that room's sort of becoming your TWiT den. I like this.
Indeed.
Yep. This is good stuff. Well, Lou, we've got a great show for the folks today. We're going to be bringing them the last segment of our iOS programming module. So remember last week we started bringing them through the creation of a note-taking app. Well, Todd Perkins is back, and he's going to show us how to finish it up and some of the finer details of making your very first app. But before we do that, I want you to make us a little paranoid.
That's right. So, you know, you ever wonder why or if social media apps are following you around? I think that's one of the questions a lot of people tend to ask themselves. And I don't know about you, Padre, but you know, Facebook alone kind of scares me with their facial recognition and their GPS locator and all that.
Well, yeah, this is one of these constant back and forths in the world of social networking and social apps, which is we kind of understand. Most of us understand that the reason why these services exist is because they're tracking us. And one way or another, they're getting data points on us about everything from our spending habits to our location to who we're connected to, and then they can use that to monetize against advertising services. I mean, that's the reason for the existence of these services and apps. But I think many of us get kind of uncomfortable when we start realizing how much data we're actually leaving behind.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, it's okay when these apps, they use the data for a specific need. Like, for instance, Facebook can use it to tell, you know, where your neighborhood is and maybe people that you're close to, maybe try to connect you up with different people, different businesses. But when people start to actually make out that information from Facebook, like, for instance, for Facebook, they track your location for your messages all day long, and they can tell you where you eat, where you work, that kind of thing. But when you have things like, there's a Google Chrome extension called Marauder's Map, and it can actually pull location data for when you're in a messaging thread between group of people, even people that you don't even know or not friends with on Facebook. It can actually map out the location of where those people are at when they're chatting.
Oh, so little bit creepy, little bit creepy on the creepy side,
right?
Yeah, I mean, let me put it this way. On the programmer side, I'm thinking, oh, that's very cool. That's a very useful bit of information that I can extract from my software. And if I'm a developer, I'm going to be looking at that as a possible avenue of monetization. Can I make money from people disclosing who they're connected to and where those people are? And the answer is yes. But as an app developer, we also have to be concerned with how much privacy and how much personally identifiable information my users are willing to release. What are your thoughts on that? Where's that line drawn between I'm giving you something and you're giving me something, and then I'm just taking advantage of you?
Yeah, I think that's where you need to visit. When you're building an app, you really need to decide, you know, what do I need this location information? Like, for instance, am I taking notes, but I want to know where that note is taken from? Like, for instance, maybe I'm taking notes while I'm at work, but then I need to take notes, and maybe it's my grocery list as notes, and that need, maybe the app can let me know when I'm near the grocery to go pick up those items, that kind of thing. Making it useful to the user. And it will also help you make it useful to, you know, whether, you know, who's using your app and where they're at. But then, you know, you have to make that decision, that fine line, whether, you know, am I really collecting it gratuitously or actually am I making it useful for the user? And am I kind of paying back that information to them? And so that's when you really have to think about it when you're collecting data, because you never know if there's going to be a hacker or somebody who's going to be able to use that information for other means.
Right. Lou, I have to ask you, your particular area of programming expertise is in CRM. Those are the projects that you lead. That's the product that you develop. CRM is all about data. I mean, if you think social media apps collect a lot of data, CRM is nothing but collection of data. But people buy those products knowing that's exactly what it does. When you have to move from the CRM mindset where I collect everything, I analyze everything, I give everything to my customer, to I'm building an app and I want to collect as much data as possible without upsetting my user, what do you personally use as your guide?
You know, I actually use my personal experience. So when I install an app today, for instance, in Android, they tell you what they're going to be collecting. Like, they'll tell you, I'm going to need access to your contacts. I need access to your GPS location. And sometimes apps, like, for instance, if I were to grab a note-taking app, I would question why they needed access to my photos, to my contacts, to my GPS location when it was just useful for taking notes. Now, if they maybe showed me that, like, for instance, I built the app and I demoed it, I had a YouTube demo or something, and I showed, oh, well, the reason why we take GPS location because of this feature, then I would say it would be okay. But that's the kind of the first red flag for a user when they're installing it. Now, some people just install apps, just, hey, I'm going to install it, and that's it. They're not going to look at that information. But then in the same sense, you should at least let them turn that functionality off, right? So maybe it's even off by default, make them kind of opt in to that functionality. So when I build an app, I usually give that type of capability to the user. I give them the ability to make them aware of why I'm going to be using it. And then when I do actually use it, let them know that, hey, you can go turn this off, or you have to turn it on to get the best feature. And you let them know that. This way you're being more transparent with the user. Now, just doing it, like, for instance, Instagram, they can actually grab your data and use it even though you have the locator turned off. And they do that for, you know, checking in and so on. So I think that is not necessarily the best pattern to follow. It's usually more transparency for the user that usually helps you out.
Yeah, I'm actually big on transparency. I remember, I won't mention the event or the application, but there was, you know how a lot of events have, oh, download our app and you'll know exactly what's going on. It'll have the calendar of events. There was one I downloaded, and in the screen for the install, it said it needed access to my GPS, to my microphone, to my camera, to my contacts, to the phone, to the SMS, to like all the different social media services that I had on the phone. And I'm thinking, I can see why you might want that, but I have no justification as to why I should give that to you. If all you do is give me times for events, you need none of that.
That's right.
That's the part of the user? That's what the user has to do? Or do you think developers need to start being a bit more honest about what they're asking for?
Well, I think it's not helpful that the store will have, like, when you download an app, it'll have, like, a little description and maybe some images of the app, and then that's it, and then you get the comments below. I mean, it'd be nice if, like, you can actually put a video in there to demo the app for the user. Maybe then you can show them what you're going to be using that functionality for, because when you go and install it, you immediately get this warning in your face saying, you want to install this app, it's going to do all these things, and you have no idea why it's doing that or why it's looking for that data. So I think it necessarily sometimes the store's fault, because it's not enough transparency. It doesn't give you the ability to know why they're doing that. Right. But in the same sense, yes, as a developer, you have to be more cognizant of the user, and even the sensitive user, the ones that are going to, you know, say, hey, why do you need this? And if that's the case, then sometimes maybe features are more opt-in. So you say, hey, if you really want this feature, you know, opt yourself in and you'll get that advantage out of it.
Remember that, folks, here on Coding 101, just because we teach you how to do it doesn't mean you have to do it. Now, when we come back, we're going to be bringing back Todd Perkins. He's going to finish off our iOS 101 module. He's going to give us the end of the creation of a note-taking application for iOS, specifically for iPhone. But before we do that, let's go ahead and take a break and thank the first sponsor of this episode of Coding 101, and it's got to be DigitalOcean. Now, let me ask you, when you are creating your app, do you imagine how big it might become? Do you imagine how many people it might affect? Do you imagine making your thousands, your tens of thousands, your hundreds of thousands, your billions of dollars off this next generation service? Well, if you do, you shouldn't be concerned about the hosting. You shouldn't be concerned about the scaling. That stuff should be taken care of by someone else who actually knows what they're doing. And that's what DigitalOcean can do for you. Now, whether you're an experienced code warrior or just getting started, you need a flexible, reliable, and affording hosting solution that can scale with you. DigitalOcean provides developers with Droplets. These are virtual private servers that can be customized and deployed quickly to host websites, web apps, production applications, personal projects, virtual desktops, pretty much anything else you can think of with full root access. We use DigitalOcean and their Droplets here at Twit in order to roll out product. Whenever we want to test something, see if it'll survive in the real world, whenever we want to get some beta information on some feature that we want to roll out, we'll first put it into a Droplet and test it with real-world traffic. As we grow and as the application grows and gets integrated into the site, we can go full scale and DigitalOcean will expand or contract the service as needed. It's really that simple. Now, DigitalOcean is built by developers for developers, and it's used by over 400,000 of them, including Twit. You can deploy and configure your Droplets via a streamlined control panel or a simple API. You get to choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, and FreeBSD. And a one-click install allows you to deploy apps like Django, Docker, Drupal, LAMP, GitLab, MediaWiki, Node.js, WordPress, Ghost, Magneto, OwnCloud, Ruby on Rails, and more. Now, all of their servers are powerful, built on hex core machines with dedicated ECC memory and RAID storage. They can have up to 20 CPUs, 64 gigabytes of memory, and 640 gigabytes of SSD storage space. That means it's highly scalable to meet the demands of a rapidly growing application or business. They also offer you auto backups and snapshots, which are important if you're growing your business so quickly that you don't have the time to maybe do good data hygiene. Well, DigitalOcean will do it for you. You can deploy your servers in regions all over the world with gigabit speeds, with 99.99% uptime, with full-featured DNS management, including dedicated IPs, and they give you web console access with HTML5, SSH, SFTP, and KVM VNC for your virtual desktops. Now, one of the ways that I tell whether or not a service is good is by looking at their user engagement, and DigitalOcean has an incredibly active community, which tells me people like the service. People want to help other people get into the service. That just means that DigitalOcean is going to be around. Now, it's so easy to get started that you could have your own SSD cloud server up and running in as little as 55 seconds. Are you out of excuses yet? I mean, if you do want to develop, if you're serious about developing, then put all of that server stand-up process to the side and just focus on what you do best, and that is making the next killer app. DigitalOcean has incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing, servers starting at just $5 per month. There's also hourly pricing available, starting at less than a penny per hour. But we're going to make it so that you can get started today and deploy your SSD cloud server for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code C101 for a free $10 credit. That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do for you. That's DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, enter the code C101 in the billing section for a $10 credit. And we thank DigitalOcean for their support of Coding 101. We welcome back to the show our iOS guru, the man who's been taking us down iOS road, Mr. Todd Perkins. Todd, thank you very much for coming back onto Coding 101.
Thank you for having me.
Todd, when we left off, we were running out of time, and you were just starting to show us how you put data into persistent memory in iOS, because it wasn't as simple as saving the array as a file to a file folder system. No, you had to reduce it into something that it actually would understand. So you showed us the code in order to be able to turn it into a sort of a binary that could be stored. But now we need to write the procedures in order to be able to bring that back up, to modify it and actually do something with that data.
All right. So here we left off in the save notes method. We had just written the code that converts our array of note objects into an NS data object. And then we save that data to persistent storage using this call on line 49 in my code. Now, when you save data like this, the data isn't actually immediately saved to the storage of the device. So it doesn't go from memory to disk instantly when you call this line of code. It actually says, it gives the operating system permission to save that data to the disk whenever the operating system chooses. Hmm. Now, if the app crashes, this actually might never save. And you can actually, if you're running the app in the simulator and you hit the stop button, then the data will not save, even if you've called this line.
So, Tom, why do that? Is that just to protect the integrity of the storage, or is there another reason why it wouldn't write immediately?
You know what? I honestly don't know. I'm not sure why. Maybe it's to keep the operating system smooth, so you're not constantly like writing data right to disk. But yeah, I'm really not sure.
Okay. You know, actually, a lot of platforms are doing that today. Even Windows 10's universal apps, they have that disk cache you have to talk to, and it will, at some point in time, it'll persist the disk and then throw you an event saying, "Hey, it's finally persisted." So I think a lot of them are starting to follow that pattern nowadays.
Hmm. All right. Well, good. Well, that's next gen programming. All right. So we've got it in this format. It's ready to write, but it's not quite written yet.
Yeah. Right. And it will write, like, if you hit the home button on your device, then usually around that time it'll write pretty quick. But if you want to force the data from memory to go to disk, then you can call the NS user defaults, standard user defaults method synchronize.
Okay.
And when you call that, then it happens automatically. So now we're going to go to load notes, and we're going to look at bringing that data out of persistent storage and back into a note array. So I'm going to go right under this if statement and write the code here. So here I'm going to create another NS data object, and I'm going to call this raw data. And just like we used the keyed archiver to archive the data, we're going to use the keyed unarchiver to unarchive the data. So we call NS keyed unarchiver unarchive object with data. Oops, that was a mistake there.
Okay.
I have my code like written out so I don't mess anything up, and I was looking at the wrong line. Okay, so we want to get this raw data, and we get that. We do the opposite of what we did on line 49. Right. So we save the data to user defaults. We first pull it out of user defaults, and then we convert it to the NS data and the node array. So here's how we grab the data from user defaults. We call NS user defaults, standard user defaults, and then we call object for key.
Oh.
And we'll just pass in K all notes. And then this gives us, actually we don't call object for key. We save it as object for key using set object. And then when we access those the values that we save, you can use object for key to get a generic object back. But there's also helper methods that where you don't have to typecast it or anything, including this one, which is data for key. So this actually, I don't know if you can see the pop-up on my screen, but this actually returns an NS data object.
Okay.
So otherwise, you're going to have to typecast it or use some kind of a generic object.
Okay.
So there we go. Data for key, KL notes. And again, KL notes is our key that we made up here. We defined on line 11. So on the next line, then what I want to do is make sure that because when our app first runs, remember we're calling load notes in this viewDidLoad method inside of MasterView controller. And this viewDidLoad just means the user interface has loaded, okay? And so this is going to occur when our app launches, and we're calling load notes there. The issue with that is we're not going to have any raw data. Right, we're not going to have. We're going to try to load data from user defaults, but this data is going to be nil that first time.
Right.
And so we actually want to stop if that's the case. So I'm just going to do a quick check here to see if raw data is nil, and if it is, I'm going to just return out of this method.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay. So now what I want to do is take this raw data and put it inside of the notes array.
And it's going to be returning from persistent storage as that binary, so you're going to have to turn it back into something usable.
Right, yes. This NS data is the binary. So now I'm going to make an NS array here, because that's the type of data when I bring it out, it's going to be in a regular array and not an NS mutable array. So I'm just going to create an A. I'm going to call this A data, short for an array of the NS data, or my data that's converted. And then I'm going to call the NS keyed unarchiver.
I'm going to
unarchive object with data, the data being the raw data. And then that gives us our NS array. So we go to the next line, and then we can set all notes. So all notes, and just like we created the array using NS mutable array with array on line 56 in my code, I'm going to do the same thing, but with the array of data here. So NS mutable array with
you're just converting an array to a mutable array now.
Right, yeah. Yeah, what this method is it says create an NS mutable array using an existing array.
Got it.
So that's the only way to create it with an existing array. So then I'll pass in a data, and that's how we convert our binary data here in NS data back into an array of note objects.
Fantastic. Okay, now, how do we test whether or not that data is being stored properly and loaded properly?
Well, we have right now, if we go to masterviewcontroller.m, we have it, the test that it's loading, but until we save any data, we can't really test anything. Right, it's going to be nil. So this time I actually want to finish, I think we're going to finish the app before we test it.
Okay.
Since there's a lot of steps in, because otherwise we just write a bunch of sample data, then we got to delete it all.
Yeah, let's finish the app so that we can actually load something into it, and then hopefully you can show us how we can actually verify that the app's working properly.
Right, good. Okay. So I'm going to actually go to, instead of writing code right now, I'm going to go to main.storyboard, and I'm going to modify the user interface, because we're now working with the Master View Controller class and the Detail View Controller class, which are actually connected to the UI of your app. Mm-hmm. And so now it's time to modify our user interface. So I've clicked on main.storyboard, and I'm looking inside of my storyboard view, which is the UI of my application. And if you find the one that says master at the top, this is the main view when you open the application. And let's say you wanted to change what that label said, you could just double click and then type in whatever you want here. For example, notes app, and then I just press return and it's saved. And I'll go over to the detail view, and I'm going to double click detail and just change that to note. So if you look at the default notes app in iOS, when you go to the detail view, it doesn't look like this. It has a full screen text view. And so we're going to take this label and we're going to swap it out with a text view, which is going to necessitate changing some of the code in detailviewcontroller.h. And that's where the label is connected to that label in our storyboard. So this circle with the filled in dot inside of it is saying that this line of code is connected to a user interface element.
Right. Okay.
So we're going to need to do two things. First, I'm going to change UI label to UI text view. I'm going to leave the property name the same. If that's confusing, then feel free to change it just to save time, and so we don't have to rewrite a whole bunch of code.
Right.
Or refactor. I'm just going to leave it. So I'm going back to, after saving this file, I'll go back to main.storyboard, and I'm going to delete this label here, and that's going to break the connection. If you go back to detailviewcontroller.h, the circle is no longer filled in. And then I'm going to show the utilities area by clicking that button at the top right of the toolbar. And in the search area there, I'm going to type text view. And as text view appears, I'm going to click and drag it onto the screen.
Ah, nice.
And I just drag and drop it right to the top left corner. And by default, it's going to fill the whole view. I'll just delete all of that dummy text. And then commit that with return. And there we go. So now we have a text view, and it's still not connected to our code. Simply just dragging a text view on there doesn't connect it to code at all.
Right. That's what I was going to ask you. So how do I connect that view controller to this view?
Okay. What you got to do, there are multiple ways to do it, but my favorite, the fastest way, is to use something called the Assistant Editor. So it's at the top of the toolbar. It's two circles. And if you click on that, it shows you your user interface and your code view. Now, with my low resolution on my screen, it's kind of hard to see what's going on. So you can actually hide the left and the right areas, and then I can kind of see that my... I can also hide... Where's that button? There we go. I can also hide that left area all the way over there. So now I can see a nice view of my my detail view here. And so what I want to do is connect this to detailviewcontroller.h. And if you look at my screen, I'm actually on detailviewcontroller.m. So I'm going to need to click in the jump bar here and just change to detailviewcontroller.h. You might not see that option there if you do just click where it says automatic.
It's a drop down, so.
Yeah, exactly. You can just go back in the breadcrumb to automatic and then choose manual and navigate your folder structure, and you'll find your the appropriate file there. So you want detailviewcontroller.h, and then I'm just going to hold right-click or control-click and then drag onto that line of code. And see, as I drag over to it, you'll see that it fills outlined.
In.
Yeah, and I let go, and
wow.
The circle is filled
in. Nice. Okay. Yeah, I like that.
So now it's connected to my code.
Easy binding.
Exactly.
Yeah, that binding's fantastic.
Very nice binding. Okay, so I've made the connection, and now we'll go back to masterviewcontroller.m. And I'm going to do something here that's going to cause a whole bunch of errors in the code, but it's going to help us to modify the code to get our note array where it's supposed to be. If you look on line 15 in masterviewcontroller, you're going to see that we have this array of objects, this NS mutable array. Now, fortunately, our note array that we're using to manage all of our data is, guess what, an NS mutable array. So it's the same type of data. So all we need to do is replace those references in masterviewcontroller.m to this the references to the objects object with a reference to our data array. So I'm going to comment out this line of code, and then as I do that, you'll see a whole bunch of errors pop up. I have 7 errors here. This actually shows me the parts of my code that need to be modified to use the notes array instead of the objects array. So if I scroll down here, line 41 is the first instance. I actually don't need this because this is checking to see if objects is not initialized, and if it's not, then we initialize it. We handle all that already inside of our note class, so I don't need any of that. But pretty much every other reference to self.objects, I'm just going to change to note get all notes. So I've done that on line 41. And then on line 51 is a little bit different of a situation. I'm going to come back to that later. But I'm going to scroll down to line 63, self.objects, replace it with note get all notes. And then line 69. Self.objects, replace it with note, get all notes. And this is going to be, so this is returning the index. Mm-hmm. This method actually controls what's shows up in each table view cell, which is, you can think of the cells as each item in the list that you see on the main screen. And it's getting the object from indexPath.row. So that just returns us the index number of the row in the table. Right now it's saying that it's giving us an NS date, and that's not true. Our array is an array of note objects, so I'm changing that to note. And then instead of object.description, it's just going to be object.note. Okay. And so that makes the text label, which is the item inside of the list, display the text of the note.
And what if the note's too long? What if that?
I was just about to say that. okay. That was a good question. The cool thing about this is we don't have to write any code to handle that. iOS handles that automatically. If a note's too long, it just cuts it off with ellipses or whatever those things are called, the dots. That's not something that you have to worry about. So
cool.
It's nice. And then finally, At line 79, there's this commit editing style, table view commit editing style. This is what's triggered after you hit the edit button and then you delete one of the items in the list. And so we need to make sure that we're removing the object from the array. So again, I just simply change self.objects to note get all notes. And then on the next line, once we modify the array, we want to make sure that that data gets saved to persistent storage. So I'm going to call note save notes. So at this point, we don't have that much more code to write. I haven't messed with prepare for segue yet because I want to talk about something else real quick. And for the most part, our notes array has replaced the default array in this template. But we need to control a couple of things. We need to control what happens when we transition to the detail view. We need to make sure that the stuff that shows up inside of the detail view is the text of the notes. And we want to make sure when you tap the plus button, and this is a feature that's in the default iOS app when you tap the plus button to create a note, is that when you hit the plus button, you're automatically taken to the other screen, the detail view, to write a note, and the keyboard pops up. So we're going to look at both of those things right now. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So so far, what we've done is we've created the code that will allow us to save to persistence, bring it back from persistence, and now we actually have to write the UI pieces, what the user can actually do with that back end, which is nice. Okay, so where do I start?
Okay, so I'm in insert new object, and this is the method that's triggered when the user taps the plus button. So we're inserting a note into the notes array, and I just noticed that I missed this part, so that's good. On line 41, right now it's putting a date inside of the notes array, and that's incorrect. We actually want to make sure that we put a note inside of the notes array. So the shorthand way to do this in Objective-C is the class method new. And that's like just creating a new instance of an object. And that's what's going to call the init method. So if we look at note.m, this one right here, this method where it initializes the note to an empty string and sets the date property, that gets called when we run the new method, and it returns that instance as well.
Todd, no, with arrays being not type specific, can you get yourself into trouble? Like, for instance, you were passing a date in instead of a note object. Could you get yourself into trouble at some point since the compiler won't say, hey, this is the wrong type?
Yep. You can get yourself into trouble for sure. So, yeah, I mean, ideally, you know, if we were making a real good production app here, we'd probably have some kind of check to say, okay, when you, or maybe not use the insert object directly here, maybe have like a helper method that says like add object, you know, or something like that. And then in the note class, we make sure that it's the right type and everything.
Got it.
So in insert new object, we want to also transition to the detail view. And to do that, we can call this method self perform segue with identifier. So we select that one. And the identifier is the name of the new screen that we want to go to, right? We want to go to that detail view. Now, the fastest way to look up the appropriate name for the detail view is just simply look down into the next method where we check to see in the template code checks to see if the segue identifier is show detail. So show detail is the name of the identifier name for the detail view. So that's what we put in here for the string. So I've show detail there. The sender will be self. And this will transition us into the detail view when we hit the plus button. But that also creates a problem. So let's go to prepare for segue. And what this code does is it's triggered right before the segue between the main view and the detail view occurs. And so what it does is it takes the index path, which is, it refers to like the selected row inside of the table, and it grabs the appropriate object in the array based on the selected row, and then it calls setDetailItem. And setDetailItem is the method in DetailViewController that says what happens if you look at this method here on line 20 and then line 29, that says what's going to be inside of the text view. So set detail item controls that. We pass in the note to that, and then we're going to display that inside of configure view. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay, cool. Back to masterviewcontroller.m. So we need to modify this. Line 52 is written with the template code. And two, we need to make sure that this is going to happen both when the user taps a item in the table view and when it happens automatically in insert new object and no item in the table view is selected. So we need some way of handling that, the instances where no item is selected, because this is going to give us an error in those cases. So let's see. I'm going to just want to make sure I don't mess it up. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're checking the index path, and we want to see if the index path is equal to nil. So, and we only want to set the object in this way if the index path is not nil. So that means that a table view row was selected, and then we can set the object or set the note based on the selected row. Otherwise, we want to set it in some other way. So if index path is equal to nil, index path is not equal to nil, then we're going to do this.
So this if a row was selected, then we're doing this.
Right, exactly. Yeah. If a row was really selected, then we're going to set the current note index based on the index
row
path
that's selected.
Or you can do the equal to nil and just return there too, right?
Well, we don't want to return because we're going to use this code too to set the detail item based on the current note that's selected. So we're going to call note set current note index, and the index is going to be, I'm going to have to typecast this to an int, and it's going to be index path dot row. And so that's going to set the current node index based on the selected index on the table. Okay. Right.
Now, what if it is nil? So they have not selected anything, but it does have to display. What do you use? Do you just use the top of the array?
We're going to use zero for that, because if you look at line 41, when we create a new note, we want the note to go at the top of the table view. So we insert it at index zero. And that means that the current note index is going to be zero. So we can do that in an else statement and prepare for segue, or we can just set it before we call prepare segue with identifier, which is what I'm going to do right here.
All right. Same difference.
So we just, right. Okay. So now we have the correct index. We have the correct note index, and we don't want to be getting it from indexPath.row. We want to get it from current note index, and we want to make sure that this is a note and not a date. And then I'm going to change self.objects. Then I'm going to change self.objects to note get all notes, and then I'm going to select indexPath.row, and we want these brackets here, right? Because what we would have is like a number right there. Mm-hmm. But we need to get the current node index. So I'm going to write a second set of brackets inside, and this is going to return an integer. So does that make sense what I'm doing here? So we have an array, and we're grabbing an index of an array, and then we're going to put a method call in the inner brackets that returns an integer for us.
Okay, and where is it getting that from? Oh, okay. There we go. That makes sense.
So we get the current node index, we put it in there, and so set detail item is actually setting a note. And that should be all the code for masterviewcontroller.m. And now we're going to finish the app in detailviewcontroller.m. So we have, when we set detail item, it sets the value of detail item based on what's passed in, then it runs configure view. Configure view also runs after the view loads. So when the new view slides in and everything's ready to work with, then configure view runs as well. And this is where we're going to set the text. Now, if we look at where's self.detail item? Okay. If you look at set detail item, the data type is ID, which in Objective-C is a generic object. And we know that in our app, it's always going to be a note. So what I'm going to do is just to make it easier to read and everything, I'm going to make detail item an instance of the note class. So I'm going to have to import a note into this file as well. So I'm going to delete. Let me know if I'm moving too fast or getting confusing or something
like
that. Okay. Great. So I now need to move the import statement into the header file because I'm referencing the note class in the header file.
Right.
That's a way to do it. Okay, so now I'll go back to the implementation file, and I can change the ID right here to note. And then in here on configure view, instead of self.detailItem.description, I can use self.detailItem.note, and that gives us the note, the currently selected note. And in addition to that, in viewDidLoad, we want to make sure that the keyboard pops up automatically. And that's actually a simple call, a simple method call right there. So we grab the detail description label, which is our text view. And then we call become first responder.
That's the keyboard?
Yep, that's the keyboard. That says the first responder is like the current object that's going to receive events. And it's kind of a generic name, but... in this, when you're applying it to a text view, it's talking about the keyboard.
Yeah, I was just saying that iOS must detect the object and then say, okay, this can have text entry, so I'll pop the keyboard for you.
Right. Okay. Now what we're doing is we can go to the detail view, and I mean we can test the app now and just see like when you hit a new note, you'll transition to it. Go into the detail view. But nothing is being saved yet. And so what we want to do is when the user is done editing the note and they've tapped the button to go back into the master view, we want to make sure that the data is saved. And now iOS or the view controller class is the class, the super class of what we're working with in here, has a method called view will disappear. And that's saying that the view that you're looking at or the screen that you're looking at is about to go away. And so you can execute code at that time. So again, this is going to be triggered after the user hits the back button to go back to the list of notes. And that's where we want to save our data.
Oh, okay.
So this is called view will disappear. So it's saying that they're done editing the text. The detail view is going to disappear. I'm going to call the super method here.
I love the naming convention they use in iOS. It should be like on unload instead, which is view will disappear.
View will disappear. They got their own rules. That's funny.
Now you don't need to synchronize it here because it's synchronized in the note, right?
Right, right. The save notes method is what's calling synchronize. Right. So right here, I'm going to grab the current note. So I'll just save it in a property. I'll call it current note. And this is going to be note, get all notes. And then it's going to be object at index. And the index is current note index. So note, get current note index. So that gives us the current note that we're working with. And then I'm going to set its note property. So current note dot note. And I'll set that equal to whatever is inside of the text view. Remember, the text view is called detailed description label. And we have its text property shown to us on line 31. So it's just called text. So self.detailDescriptionLabel.text. So that gives us the text that's inside of the text view. And then what we want to do is check to see. Oh, wait. First, what we want to do is we've gotten the note. We've modified the note. And now we need to make sure that the object inside of the notes array is set. So I'm going to call note, get all notes, and then in outer brackets, set object, and the object is going to be current note, and it says at indexed subscript. So I'm going to pass in the index, which again is note, get current note index. right there. So do you see what we're doing here? We're just modifying, making sure that the that these changes are saved into our notes array.
Right.
So now that we've done that, we want to check to see if the user actually entered any text in the text field. And we want to make sure to see if they did have text before. What if they deleted everything? And if they deleted everything, we're just going to delete the note. So we're going to check to see if the text field is empty. So self.detailedDescriptionLabel.text. And now we want to check to see if it's an empty string inside of there. Now, in most languages, you could just simply do something like this, you know, is equal to empty string. In Objective-C, you actually have to call a method to check to see the value of a string. So I'm going to put square brackets around this call and then type is equal to string. And that's how you do a string comparison in Objective-C.
Got it. Okay.
So is it an empty string? And if it is, we're just going to trash that note right here. So I'm going to call in double brackets note, get all notes, and then remove object at index. And the index is going to be the current node index. Just like that.
Is it going to automatically reorder the index, or do you have to do that?
What do you mean by, no, it doesn't change any of the, oh, you mean like, okay, we remove index 5 and then index 6 shifts to index 5. Yeah, it does that by itself.
Okay.
And then here, we go to the next line right below this, and we have two more lines to write. We want to save the notes. So we've modified our notes array. We want to save those changes. And then finally, if we just go back after this, we won't see the update when we go back to the master view. So in order to refresh the data inside of that table, we actually need to call a method to reload the data in the table. Because it doesn't reload automatically.
Is this because we're pushing changes to the view rather than the view asking for changes?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's how it works. I'm not sure why it's handled like this exactly.
Is that just the OS? It's if you back out, it's just going to assume that it's going back to the same page. It's not
exactly. It's assuming that it's going to the same data. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So the way that we reference that, we remember we had that table property in note.m, and it's called, we use get table to grab it, and we set it in masterviewcontroller.m right here on line 28. And so we can reference the table view. Yeah, which is still, you know, it's still the same table. I guess the other screen that's coming in is kind of just like laying on top of it, and the table view screen is still existing there. So we need to make sure that it updates. So note, and then we call get table, and I'll put another set of brackets, and then we call reload data. And what that does is it's going to trigger this method, table view cell for row at index path. And this is the one that takes all, it finds the appropriate note, puts the note text inside of the table view cells.
Oh, okay.
Cool. And that actually completes our app. Hopefully doesn't have any bugs.
Okay, so moment of truth. Push the
line
magic
code
button. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to need to show this, right?
Yes.
just tell you guys it works and then don't show it on my screen.
Actually, you know what? Before you show it, wait, let's learn, stay in the tease. Stay in the tease. Before you show this, let's go ahead and take just a moment to thank the second sponsor of this episode of Coding 101. And you know what? Since we got Todd from Lynda, I am absolutely tickled pink that Lynda is the sponsor for Coding 101. Now, if you haven't used Lynda, it means you probably haven't been watching much of Twit TV because we talk about it all the time. It is a great repository of knowledge, not just for when you want to learn new skills, but when you want to brush up on the skills you already have. Now, what is contained within Lynda? What isn't contained within Lynda? It's not just learning software. It's not just learning programming. It's not just learning about things in technology. It's basically everything. You want to learn a new hobby? You can do that on Lynda. You want to learn how to edit video? You could do that on Lynda. Do you want to brush up on some business skills that may help you get a better job? You can find that at Lynda. Lynda.com is for problem solvers. It's for the curious. It's for the people who want to make things happen. Now, if you do want to make things happen, if you want to make your life better, if you just want to open your mind to the world of knowledge around you, lynda.com is the place you want to be. Now, some of the latest lynda.com courses that I can recommend are up and running with Raspberry Pi. I love that one. Up and running with Git and GitHub, and managing PHP persistent sessions. And I know I've talked about Code Clinic before. It's a multi-course series where lynda.com experts look at common code challenges and offer their solutions using C++, C#, Java, PHP, Python, and Ruby. They just released 4 new entries covering JavaScript, C, R, and Swift. Now, of course, you're going to be able to find Todd there. Just go to lynda.com and look for iOS. You're going to find his non-programmer session, which is great. This is where you should be going. If this module of Coding 101 gave you a little bit of hunger for programming with iOS, you got to find his work because it's fantastic. And he will take you step by step by step. And by the time you're done, you're going to be so comfortable with iOS, you're going to need to write a check to Coding 101 to pay for our vacation to the Bahamas. That's actually that's not part of the ad. Now, with a lynda.com membership, you can watch and learn from top experts who are actually passionate about teaching. These aren't people who are just going through the motions. They actually want you to learn their material. You can stream thousands of video courses on demand and learn on your own schedule. You get to learn on your pace. Don't underestimate what that means. It means you get to use the device that you want. You can switch from your laptop to your desktop to your tablet to your phone. You can pick up where you left off. You can look at transcripts, which is what I love because it means you can find a particular part of the video that talks about the problem you're handling rather than having to scroll or scrub through an entire video course to find the 10, 20 seconds that might be pertinent. You can also create playlists and share them with your friends. So if you want to share the gift of knowledge, lynda.com makes it easy. Now, here's what we want you to do. We want you to try Lynda for free. Your lynda.com membership gives you unlimited access to training on hundreds of topics, all for one low flat rate. And whether you're looking to become an expert, you're passionate about a hobby, or you just want to learn something new, you can visit lynda.com/C101 and sign up for a free 10-day trial. That's lynda.com, lynda.com/C101. And we thank lynda.com for their support of Coding 101. Now, Todd, hopefully nothing has been fat-fingered. Hopefully everything has gone in its place. Let's go ahead and see that app.
All right. You guys see the simulator all right?
It's up.
Yes.
Okay. So it's like we talked about. You hit the plus button to create a new note. Instantly taken to the detail view with the keyboard popping up. And I'll create a note right here. Just call it note one. And there we go. And now at this point, it should save to persistent storage. So I should be able to close the app. And then I'm going to reopen it. So I don't know what you're seeing on my screen right now, but you should see the note app reopening.
Can you simulate a non-standard shutdown? Is that possible?
I don't think so. Oh, you can reboot.
Well, okay, we don't want to do that. that would be a great way to show that. Oh yeah, you know, if you don't synchronize, if you shut down before it actually synchronizes, you won't save the memory. But
right, yeah. I mean, I could do it right here, like where I've edited the note, but I haven't hit Notes app and gone back. And at that point, that shouldn't be saved. So when I run it again, it says note one.
There we go.
Right? The edited was not there. So, but if I hit Notes app, it's then I close the app and relaunch it, then it's synchronized. Yeah.
Nice. I love the fact that we know everything that's running in the background, from the first responder pop-up that you get when you add a note to the synchronization of it before it goes back to the main screen. This is fantastic. This gives them a top to bottom, start to finish view of what it takes to create an app in iOS. Now, I will say, if they tried to create a Notes app, they're probably going to get dinged from the market for what is it? What's the category for repeating functionality or duplicating functionality?
Oh, yeah, something like duplicating functionality.
Oh my gosh! Now, what would you do if you were actually going to take this and turn this into one of your main projects? What else would you want to see out of something like a Notes app?
Well, you could do something like cloud storage. If you look into key value storage in iCloud, It actually doesn't take any more code than what we've written already. You just need to change the names of some of the methods. So you could do that, add a little bit to it. Maybe you could store pictures, something like that. You would. If you wanted to release your own, you'd have to be creative and find some extra stuff, bells and whistles.
Interesting. So storing pictures. Right now, we're storing a binary of just a text string. How would you put pictures in this? Would you just point to them and then bring them into the app? Because obviously, you're not going to want to store each and every single picture within the persistent storage of the Node app.
Right. Yeah, you can actually save images as NS data.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so you can convert that to them and save them in that way.
Do they have a rich text editor already built into as a control, or do you have to build your own?
You have to build your own for that. Yeah, there's no rich text editor.
Todd Perkins, I want to thank you so very much. This has been fun. This has been something that the Coding 101 audience has been asking for a long, long time, and you just gave them everything they wanted and then some. They've seen what it takes to develop in iOS. They've seen what a iOS development looks like from the beginning to the end of the app, and they've seen the finished product. Now, of course, we should repeat, this is something that has come up in our chat room, that this will work just fine, completely free, as long as you want to keep it on the simulator. But if you actually do want to move this to a device, you do have to become a developer, and that means paying a fee to Apple. What is that right now?
It's currently $99.
And it takes a while. If you want to become a developer, it's not like you just pay and then you're a developer. And that's a process?
Yeah, I don't remember exactly how long it was. I've done it with a business and I've done it personally. With a business, I want to say it took a lot longer, like a month or maybe multiple months. With a personal development account, I want to say it was less than a week. So it's pretty quick.
Right. And I think that's just because, obviously, there are a couple more legal ramifications if you're going to be developing as a business for iOS. And Patrick Delahanty has actually just reminded us that for that $99, you also get the ability to develop for OS X. So it's which you would want to do. I mean, hopefully you're going to be branching out at some point to cover multiple screens. Todd, I want to reach out to you. Is there any last nuggets of wisdom that you would like to give to the Coding 101 crew? Because I know they're going to love the fact that you've been with us for all these weeks.
Well, I would say look up iCloud key value storage. Play around with the user interface stuff in iOS. It's really easy to use, and it's after you get used to the basic rules of how it works, connecting UI elements to code, it's really easy to get used to using all those tools. So building your own app with your own total custom UI is actually a lot easier than you might think.
And of course, if you have a lydda.com membership, or if perhaps you're taking advantage of the free 10-day trial because of our ad, make sure to look up Todd Perkins. Look at his lessons. It is some of the most clear, most concise ways to get into iOS programming. I can't recommend it enough. Todd, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being a member of our Code Warrior here on Coding 101. Where else can they get a hold of you if they want to reach out, maybe offer congratulations for your module, or maybe ask you a question about development?
Yeah, find me on Twitter at AskTodd. Let me know, especially if you make something. If you're learning iOS just now and you make something cool, send it on over.
There you go. Todd Perkins, both Lou and I salute you for being our Code Warrior. Thank you very much. Of course, folks, you can find all of our episodes of Coding 101 at our show page at twit.tv/code. There you will find our previous episodes, our modules, in case you want to go back over some of the languages we've already gone over. For example, C# or PHP or Python or Ruby. That's right. You can find it there, twit.tv/code. Also, don't forget that we do this show live every Monday, except this Monday if you're watching right now, at 2:30 p.m. Pacific time. Just go to live.twit.tv. And as long as you're watching live, don't forget that you can find our chat room at irc.twit.tv. Jump in and participate. It's part of the experiment that is Twit TV. Finally, I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. I got to start with Lou Maresca. Now, Lou Maresca just became our actual permanent co-host not too long ago. And I got to say, I am so happy that you are part of the Twit TV army. You are a Twit. Sir, where can they find you? Where can they find your work?
Really love being here. Thanks so much. You can always find me at LouMM, Twitter. And, of course, all my work during the day at Microsoft is at crm.dynamics.com.
And you know what, people? Lou works really hard. I mean, he has a day job. He has to program for a living. And he lends himself to TwitTV because he likes the community and he likes to share his knowledge. So do me a favor. Follow him. Go LouMM on Twitter. Follow him. Say thank you. Say hello. Offer him a hearty congratulations and a pat on the back because I wouldn't want to host with anybody else. Lou Maryska, I salute you, sir.
Thank you, Padre.
And finally, again, big thanks to Leo and Lisa for letting us do the show and to my TD, who I am so afraid to toss to him every week because I don't know what he's going to do. Eskimo Zach, where can people find you on the TwitTV network?
Thank you, Padre. You guys can find me on Twitter at Eskimo Zach, where I will be tweeting at Lou. Congratulations, Lou. You have
done stuff.
1337 tweets.
Oh. All right.
Every week. Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballester. That's Lou Maryska. This has been Coding 101. And Lou, what do we say?
End of line.